Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Every Tuesday, we've been having public discussions on issues of concern in and out of the criminal justice arena and around the country. And everyone has had an opportunity or does have an opportunity to have their voices heard. We have been discussing in the past few weeks, and we will continue to talk about this until the end of May, that we are planning on having a national event, 2023 event, to abolish death penalties, to abolish life and life without paroles. First of all, death penalties, I don't believe, are helping anyone. Not only is it not helping anyone, but it's giving mixed messages. No one has the right to kill anyone because they have killed someone, even if it's a government leader. We live in a country where our legislative members in some states have the criminal mentality, and that mentality is to execute anyone that has committed a capital crime. Yet, the government is doing exactly that when they execute an individual for that crime. We have to look at some of these things. We have children, adolescents in this country who are getting mixed messages. They're getting mixed messages because there are times when everyone wants them to be kids, and there are times when everyone wants them to be adults. It's times when everyone in the country right now, and around the world really, has been going through so much with all of these plagues, these pandemics, with all of the conflict between these countries abroad, and the United States putting their nose into it as well. We have to look at all of these issues and try to figure out why we blame these youth for being so bad, for doing so much wrong, when we ourselves are so messed up psychologically. We have in this country epidemics of not only coronaviruses and others, but we also have epidemics of mental illnesses and addictions throughout the country. Whether it be in the government, in the prisons, in the streets, in the communities, anywhere, the homes, the nursing homes, the hospitals, even the churches, the mosques, the synagogues. We need to look at all of these issues and ask ourselves, why do we think that the adolescents, the youth in the communities should be doing anything other than what they're doing if we ourselves are living in a dysfunctional environment? So rather than executing, using the death penalty, many have said life and life without parole is the alternative. But yet we are the only country in the entire world that has mass incarceration, that has life sentences and life without, unless, mind you, other countries do have life sentences, but only for the extreme, only for terrorists and serial killers. Killers who have killed children, mutilating bodies. But there's no reason why there should be life and life without parole for wrongfully convicted, for first-time offenders, for victims who became offenders. And there are many people in prison who are victims and were victims, and that's what led them into incarceration. Stumbling because they lived amongst people who preyed on the vulnerable, the innocent. We have organizations that have their own motives for starting their organizations. Not to help others, but to benefit themselves. As much exposure as you may get does not mean that you are competent. As much exposure that you may get in the media or in the communities, unless you are transparent, unless people actually see that you are doing something to help the less fortunate. There have been so many leaders of organizations, including nonprofits, that have actually been sentenced to prison or have had to pay penalties for trying to take monies that were given to them to run their organizations. So when we talk about life and life without parole, that too is giving mixed messages. Because we have what's called the Department of Corrections around the country to correct people, to reform them, to rehabilitate them, and to release them. But it's gotten to the point now where people are thrown into prison and the keys are thrown away, where people are thrown into prison and many of them are not getting the rehabilitation that they need. Many of them are not being allowed to take educational programs or work programs. Many of them are being permanently damaged by the contracted medical and psychological providers that the Department of Corrections around the country hires. A lot of these providers, these contracted providers, are not licensed to do what they should be doing. Many people have been permanently damaged because of it. So we have decided in June of 2023 to hold a national event for the entire month. We are going to be looking at all of these corporations that have invested in the prisons, which many of you know as prisons for profit. They want to keep the prisons full because these people are making all kinds of money in their investments. We are going to make daily calls, write emails daily, letter writing. And there are going to be protests in some states to do away with life and life without parole and get in sync with other countries, Norway being the role model for all Department of Corrections, all prisons throughout the world, the Netherlands, Germany, and many others. Dorothy D'Agostino has been working on this as well. And we've been gathering names, addresses, email addresses, telephone numbers of various people around the country, mainly governors nationwide in every state, legislative members, those who are fighting for criminal justice reform, the loved ones of the incarcerated themselves, their friends, their advocates. And so we're going to be talking about that today. We are also going to be talking about the wrongfully convicted. We are also going to be talking about the restoration of prisoners' rights to vote, because Maine and Vermont have never taken away the rights of prisoners to vote, because the prisoners have done nothing to the country. Those who have done things to the country, as such with the Capitol on January 6th, maybe they need to have their rights to vote taken from them. But the incarcerated individual citizens of the United States should not and never have had their voting rights taken from them. Another thing that we will be talking about. We're going to also be talking about oversight. Oversight of prisons around the country. There is no oversight in these prisons, and that's why so much is being going on and so much damage and so many suicides, alleged suicides, so many other things going on in the prison because there's no oversight. So this is something else that we will be doing and writing about and calling about and emailing about in June, every day for the entire month of June. So I'm going to bring on with us now Dorothy D'Agostino, and she's going to talk a little bit more about her situation and what she is doing to help in this a unique process in June. Dorothy, are you on with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Happy to have you. Honored to have you on with us, Dorothy. You've been one motivated woman, activist, and everything else for this upcoming event. And it's going to be a good one if everybody takes heed and participates. So do you want to talk to the audience a little bit about yourself and what led you to this and what you've been doing?
Okay, I sure will, Leona. And I would like to share the best news that I have gotten today from my incarcerated loved one. But I will share, my name is Dorothy Jean D'Agostino. I am formerly from Pennsylvania. I have a son incarcerated in Frackville, Pennsylvania. He has been in for 25 years. He has life without parole, but I'm extremely, extremely proud of him. with all the accomplishments and everything that he has done, even with a fantastic diploma with dignity. I was from a very uppity family, four children of their own. I would say my mother was like Hitler. In fact, I always said that she was Hitler's child, and very controlling. But through that control, I learned a lot. And even though I didn't like her ways at that time, she did me a favor, and she taught me some things that I use today. And it was a word of taboo when you would say someone is incarcerated or prisoner. Her term was lock them up, throw the key away. Do not talk about it. They need to be in there. They need to be executed. Gone. Well, I grew up like that until it came to my own home. Shane got incarcerated. I learned that day it can go into any family, but families do not know what it's like to have someone behind the wall. And you can't be judgmental. You don't know what they go through every day. We need to walk in their shoes and know what they go through. And it's not an easy life. Through my son, Shane, he taught me not to be judgmental, not to be racist, and listen and help with the system inside. Through him and through the mirror in the looking glass, I saw what I had to do to make change. I believe in second chances. Everybody, there is a little bit of a line when you have tourists and things like that. No, I don't believe they believe in a second chance when they destroy thousands of people. If Putin was in prison, I would not think of giving him a second chance. So that is where second chances are important with life and life without parole. And I will reach out to anyone if they want to call me on the phone. They can call me at 215-0095, or they can email me at djean, that's J-E-A-N, angel, A-N-G-E-L, 04, at yahoo.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I don't care what time, if you need to talk about a loved one incarcerated, I'm there to listen. And with that, I will say the good news that I received today. My son graduated from Brookside with high honors in criminal law and criminal justice. He is a 4, special needs, I will say. I don't like the word mental or retard or things like that. I like special needs. And he was called out of the group today by the warden, and it scared the heck out of him. And she says, I'm promoting you. And he looked at her real goofy, knowing my son how goofy he looked at her. And she says, I want you to be an escort problems and take them to where they have to go. And he was so delighted in doing that and knowing that he was promoted. But he said, Mommy, they sure can pull the wool over your eyes when they want to. And I had to laugh at that. But that was my good news today, and he is higher than a kite with the news that he got. Thank you for listening to me, and sorry I took so long.
No, thank you, Dorothy. I'm glad you talked about that. And I want to. This is what I want to bring up as well, because this is the inconsistency that we have in our prisons around the country. They pick and choose, and unfortunately, some are fortunate enough to be able to get the education and to be able to actually achieve while they're inside. There's also a misconception of the type of people in prisons. People stereotype, and they look at all prisoners as being uneducated, hardcore criminals, people who don't deserve to live, people don't deserve to have the respect. And unfortunately, people do not know because they don't try to find out. They don't try to look into these situations and learn more about the criminal justice system, because there are so many people in prison who are educated with the opportunity to participate in programs as Dorothy's son did, to be able to participate and to be able to grow from it. Unfortunately, we don't have that throughout the country. We don't have that in all the prisons. And it's sad because there are people who have stumbled, that have had education, that have been to school, that have been to college, that have had working conditions, normal working conditions like any one of us. Those who were out there helping others, those who are out there with a heart. And unfortunately, there are people in society that don't have that same heart. They don't have that same compassion for others. And they prey on the vulnerable. They prey on the innocent. They prey on those who they can manipulate. And this is what causes so many people to stumble. And we have in our society today people throughout the country who have been incarcerated since they were in their late teens, up to 25 years of age. Unfortunately, these people, as many psychologists have stated, are not criminally responsible. They have not grown to their fullest extent to be able to comprehend some of the things that they do. But we have thousands of people in prison like this who went into prison under the age of 25 and have been in prison for 25, 30, 40, 50 years. There are people in prison in wheelchairs, people in their 80s and 90s, 70s, people with dementia, Alzheimer's. So what is the purpose of keeping them in prison other than to continue to make money off of them? And a lot of these people in prison now, all of them really, they have to pay for everything. They have to pay for everything, and it has to all come from inside the prison. And Dorothy will talk about the vending machines, because when we start doing these phone calls and these letters and these emails, writing all of these things to the media as well, we need to include all of these things, because the Department of Corrections around the country is making so much money even off the vending machines. These corporations that are making so much money. And a lot of these vending machines have no names on them, no telephone numbers, no way to trace them. And this is another issue. People have got to buy from the penal system or they don't get to do anything. I have self-published books, which I have tried myself to send to prisoners, and they didn't receive them. They weren't able to get them. Catalogs.com. Catalogs.com is free catalogs for the incarcerated. Anybody can order these catalogs for them. And yet, after ordering 29 catalogs pertaining to sports, gymnastics, religion, they never receive them. The Department of Corrections makes it impossible for us to get anything into the prisoners, because they want everything to be bought out of the penal system. The Department of Corrections. Dorothy, what were you saying on that?
A lot of them, when those catalogs come inside, they are thrown in the trash and not even delivered to the individual. And
Mail
I
tampering.
Think that is disgraceful.
Mail tampering. A lot of that goes on in the prisons. And that's why I wish the people that judge prisoners, I wish they would at least make an effort to know more about the individuals that are incarcerated. Now, the media just went into a prison in Massachusetts. It goes to show you the media can go in when they want to. Because when people hear about a crime, they only hear one side. They don't hear the side of the incarcerated individual or the suspect. They don't get to have a voice. But yet, the Department of Corrections did one thing that was good in one of the prisons in Massachusetts, in Concord Prison. And the media went in and was talking all about the good that is being done in this prison. And anybody that has been in that prison can tell you, at one time, that was one of the worst prisons. I don't know what it's like now. The prisoners were abused, as well as other prisons. But they went into the prison facility to be able to report the good. But yet when the bad happens, they don't report it. There was a riot that took place in a prison in 2020. Prisoners had asked the superior if they would remove one of the guards that was giving them a hard time. I guess a lot of prisoners were complaining about the same one. And they were told that they're just going to have to deal with it. Well, see, sometimes when people don't get their voices heard, there are consequences. And what happened was there was a riot. A lot of prisoners were sent to the hospital. And two or three of the guards were also sent to the hospital. Nothing life-threatening, though. We wonder why there's so many strikes going on across the country, food strikes, because the prisoners are getting fed little to nothing, or they're getting fed rotted food. Someone on Facebook one time wrote about her, I guess it was her boyfriend or fiance or husband, who worked in the kitchen, and was talking about how they leave the food out for hours and sometimes days. There's maggots around them, and they serve these to the prisoners. The media needs to go
what
in.
Yes. What about putting feces in the beef stew and serving it? Or urine in the food and serving it? That has occurred, Pennsylvania.
And it says,
and how would you like to hear your loved one eating feces? That is disgusting. They are fed food loaf, which is when you're in the RHU, restricted housing unit, they prepare food loaf. That is all food left over from the week, and they bake it, and that's what they get. There is so much that goes on that the people on the outside are blind and do not know. We are their voice that they can't say.
You know,
you're talking
I hear...
about abuse. There was I think it was Somerset. There was this guard that kept on calling this one guy the N-word. He reported it. He filed grievances. And he had, they issue you boots. And I think the boots are made in another prison. I'm not sure which one. And he had a pair of boots. So I'm going by and saying, hey, the N-word and this and that, and was throwing things at him when he was walking past the cell. Well, the cell was behind bars, and you can't get to the individual. But this one day, this guy that got tired of being called the N-word and getting ridiculed all the time beat the heck out of this CO with the pair of the boots he had on his feet. The CO went to the hospital, but there was five COs that beat the guy up very badly. Then the Department of Corrections in Pennsylvania outlawed all boots, and they had to take the boots and throw them away. Why the boots were not allowed in the prisons in Pennsylvania because of this guy beating up the guard.
Mm-hmm. So much of that goes on.
The guard agitated him to the point he couldn't take it anymore, and no one would help him. And that's the retaliation that they get.
As I say,
it's harmful.
People do a lot of talk, and that's what really is frustrating, because I'm the type of person, I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. People do a lot of talking, and they don't do anything except talk. And that's what happens with a lot of people in society today. They talk about others, but they don't have a clue that they're doing the same thing. And with these situations here, unfortunately, nothing's being done about it, and that's why it escalates. There was her name was Jennifer Gonomer, something like that. She was a journalist, and she was allowed to go into the prison. With Elaine Bartlett was a prisoner. She got out years ago, but she served 16 years on an offense that she was delivering a package. She didn't even know what was in it, but it turned out to be drugs. She was in prison for 16 years. She's out of New York. And Jennifer Gonomer was allowed to go into the prison and write a book, Elaine Bartlett's life, her story. The book was written by Jennifer Gonomer, but Elaine, gave her all the information, but she wasn't a co-author, which was ridiculous. And to this day, I don't know if Elaine ever got any monies from it, but I met Elaine in Boston at the University of Massachusetts during a book signing. But see how the people can go in. They will go into the prisons to make money off of prisoners. They will go into the prison to do good stories that happen by the correctional center or correctional facilities. But yet, as far as the prisoners go, they're still dirt to these very people that are going in when they want to go in. And that's why we have so many wrongfully convicted in prison, because they don't get their voices heard. But once they come out and they're exonerated, and there was one recently in Massachusetts who was exonerated and said he's going to fight for prison reform. This is the time we find out exactly who these organizations are that say so much, and these people are that say so much about fighting for prison reform. We'll find out who they are, because they will get involved in some of these things, especially if it's going to be a national event, because every state may operate, may have different ways of operation in the penal system and in the communities. But the problems in every state are exactly the same. The abuses, the violations, the deprivation, the racism, the hatred, the retaliation, the vengeance, division. And I'm sick of this division, 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 because what happens with people is they listen to the wrong people. And before you know it, there's division amongst them. But if they were their own people, if they were their own boss, if they were their own leadership, instead of listening to others, there wouldn't be a lot of this stuff that's going on in the United States as it is. It's sad, but this is what happens. We have a caller. 805.
Hi, Leona.
Hi, who is it?
This is Lawrence.
I'm sorry. Oh, Lawrence. Lawrence, would you have any?
You didn't know your son's voice.
That's not my son. Well, you might say Lawrence is there. Yeah, Lawrence is the vice president of our organization. He's also the founder of the Legacy Program. Lawrence, please introduce yourself, hon.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Blog Talk. It's so nice to have you here today. My name is Lawrence Drink. I am the founder of Legacy Programs Education Reentry, as well as the vice president of New Vision Organization based out in Massachusetts. Our goals with the New Vision Organization is to, for first-time offenders, life without and life sentences, and Legacy Programs we work side and side with reentry services such as housing, clothing, food, resources, anything that's available out there to keep people successful and permanently out of prison. Our goal is to keep that bunk empty. So it's a lot of advocacy. And I was listening to what you were saying, and when we talk about in prison, I served 20 years in California State Prison straight, ever since I was 18 years old and was released 2 years ago. So what ends up happening is, you know, we always talk about gangs, you know, gangs this, gangs that, and, you know, society puts this emphasis on neighborhoods, which quite honestly, the neighborhoods, yeah, they're gangs, but you know what, they're family. And that's their only source of support network, kids growing up in the neighborhoods. And so, you know, when they put this emphasis and this, they box us in where these urban neighborhoods are nuisance. No, they're not. You just pegged it as that. It's really a good source of support from everyone. And we are family in those communities. And that's how it should be viewed. It's just low income. It is lower poverty families that come together. And, yeah, there is some shenanigans that goes on, but we all look out for each other. And if only people got to see that coin, that side of that coin, it would probably be viewed different. But we talk about these gangs. You know, in prison, they had gangs. We had gangs amongst inmates, and they had gangs amongst guards. Hence, DJ Vodovich exposing the green wall. That was a game. Two or more people. And so when these guards got together and they made these gangs throughout California, it became a thing. And so we have to look at the culture of what is a gang. And it can be white-collar gang. It could be blue-collar gang. It can be low poverty. It just that was the CO support network to encourage each other for the violence and for the turmoil that they put onto the population and the politics behind it, because quite frankly, there's no difference between the inmate and the CO in my eyes, because we both play the same games. We both get into the same stuff. It's just one is ignored because one's an authority figure and one is not, because we're being punished for a crime we did or did not commit. Good point. What are you guys talking about, though?
And you know, that's a good point. And what I was saying too is, just like with the death penalty, it's the government leaders that have the death penalty in their state, it's almost as though they have the same criminal minds, because they want to do something terribly, terribly damaging, killing somebody because someone did that. And there's people out in society that have had tragedies happen in their lives where they have lost loved ones. And it gets to the point where you can be resilient through a lot of trauma. But someday, if it continues, someday that resilience is not going to be there. You're not going to be able to keep your guard up. Once you let your guard down and something happens, this is what sets people off. This is what causes that psychological illness to escalate. They don't realize this. And I'll tell you, for the audience, a lot of people talk about religion. I'm going to say one thing. I don't talk about religion, but if I was to talk about religion, I have been involved in almost every religion out there. I have been in the Catholic Church, born and raised in the Catholic Church. I've been in Pentecostal churches, Baptist churches. I've joined these religions so that I know. If I say anything against them, I know, because I've experienced it. I've been in a mosque. I've been in a synagogue. I've been in Jehovah's Witnesses. I've been in Seventh-day Adventist churches. I've been in all these churches. And I can tell you, even knowing this and even experiencing it, I don't talk about religion. But I do know one thing about all religions. It tells you not to judge. And we don't need to judge, because we are all sinners. So what we need to do is look at these situations that are before us. We need to look at these incarcerated individuals, and we need to wonder why they are in. Marian Jacobs from the Netherlands talks about it all the time, with deeper justice. It's not about the offender. It's not about the victim. It's about the cause. What causes someone to stumble? What causes someone to commit a crime? We have too many people in our country who who are so worried about impressing everybody that they're keeping their heads up above everybody, trying to be better off than other people, that they're forgetting what humility is. They're forgetting how to be humble. We have organizations out there that are supposed to be advocating for the incarcerated, but they're doing things to their own benefit. There's one organization that has a problem with me. That's Prison Illegal Services in Massachusetts. They have a problem with me, and I'm not too fond of them, but they have a lot of people in Massachusetts fooled. They have manipulated them. They have put themselves in the media. But one of the things that bothered me is we were trying to advocate for an incarcerated individual, and I didn't want to be involved in it because it was a relative. So what I did, I assigned one of our political science graduates who has just recently been admitted or approved for law school. She got the case. She made some calls to Prison Illegal Services. I emailed Prison Illegal Services twice with the incarcerated individual's application and signed release of information. Because they want to get back at me, they have not responded to me. They have not responded to the volunteer advocate. They have not responded to the client. Now, the client is simply asking for help in a medical issue, a serious medical issue. The advocate, the legal advocate for the client is simply trying to get a status on what is going on because Prison Illegal Services told one of the legislative members that they were doing an intake on this individual. That was 4 months ago. They wrote one letter to the individual 4 months ago. And we, to this day, have not gotten any information from them. They think that they're hurting me. They're not hurting me because I don't give a shit. My whole thing is my client, not only the one that I'm talking about now that has done nothing but try to get help, but other clients that we've had. And my volunteers, when they disrespect students that are volunteering for organizations to do their internships, to get their experience, to learn how to be professional in their work, being treated by unprofessional people that are still acting like high school students with their little cliques, this bothers me. This bothers me because we're trying to help incarcerated individuals who have been traumatized, many of them, from childhood. Many of them who were wrongfully convicted. Many of them who made one mistake in their life and are serving a life without parole in prison. But when organizations like PLS, Prison Illegal Services, disrespect students who are trying to do their job because they're trying to make me feel bad, they're dead wrong because they can do nothing to make me feel bad. I am an elderly person now. I started out when I was younger. The staff at Prison Illegal Services was not even existing when I first started out 20-something years ago. So these are actually young people who are now leaders or directors of Prison Illegal Services that just act like kids, but they pull in the people, the prisoners they know are going to make them look good. They pull in prisoners with connections. They pull in people with connections to be involved in their organization as board members or as people that they're helping to help others. Organizations like that are about nothing to me because any good that they do, they have devastated. They have made themselves look so dirty because any good that they do, people don't know what they're doing to others in the background. I appreciate my volunteers. I appreciate the people that have taken the time to join organizations that are actually trying to help the incarcerated population. I respect these students. And whatever anybody does, if they don't like me, tell me to my face or do whatever, but leave my volunteers alone. And these incarcerated individuals who mean no harm, have not shown any disrespect, are the ones that pay because of immature people running an organization such as Prison Illegal Services. And I challenge them if they want to come on and talk.
And you know,
it.
Leona, I got the pleasure of meeting some of the volunteers, and they are just Man, you got some great volunteers.
Just, they're awesome.
You could see it in their eyes. You could hear it in their voice. You could see it in their body language that they are just, for them to go out and take their time to help out somebody, you know, they're just amazing. And it's just, it's a thankless job as an advocate. I'm speaking from my experiences is that, you know, we get used, we get abused, we get yelled at, we get treated like crap. And that's on every aspect, you know, except for the people that we volunteer for, you know. And so, but the thing is that, you know, nobody deserves to be treated differently because of somebody else. That's just wrong. And, you know, those organizations that do stuff like that, like what you're talking about, is just, it's very unfortunate. And, you know, I think that's one thing that's taught me is coming out from prison. You know, I hang on to the people that treat me good. You know, I love them. I give them my full support, loyalty, and everything. You know, they are my people. And the people that aren't, you know, like you say, I have to really be careful on being jaded. And, you know, just all the stuff you do for New Vision Organization out in Massachusetts is just truly amazing what you've built. And, you know, and the only thing I would say, Leona, is that just thank you for what you do and hang on to that, because you're going to get 10 FUs before you get one thank you, right? That's just how it works.
So I'm going to ask you in a minute to tell your story too, because I want people to know, as I was saying about the incarcerated population, not to stereotype, because there's traumas in people's lives that ultimately lead them to prison. But as far as, like I say, as far as the volunteers, they are excellent volunteers. They're good people. And when an organization can completely ignore them purposely, ignore the potential client, ignore the volunteer advocate, because they don't want to hear the name New Vision, or they don't like the director of New Vision, and that is Prison Illegal Services. And that's one of the reasons why. And they might, and I'm sure that they listen. If they don't listen, I'm sure they have people listening to this radio show, because I brought this up before. There's people that understand what I am talking about with that organization. They're in their cliques too, but they don't go, they don't email me all the others involved in the email. They email me privately, and they let me know that they have not changed their feelings towards me. So I don't care. You know, it's just that there are two people. There's leaders and there's followers. And I am a leader, as you are, Lawrence, and you also, Dorothy. But the people out there that are holding back because they're afraid to go up against their cliques, that's sad, because they're not leaders, they're followers. And it's sad that they would stoop so low to be able to turn against other people because they're being talked to by their clique or their people about an individual or individuals that are disliked by them. See, we don't have to get involved. If two people have a problem, or two organizations have a problem, everybody can stay neutral. Everyone can remain to be friends with both organizations. But we live in Massachusetts, and unfortunately, Massachusetts is a state that they feel they have to take sides, which shows a lot of insecure people. But again, this may happen in other states. But I just want you, Lawrence, if you will, please let the audience know how you came about to form the legacy program, Each One Teach One, you know, to come on board with New Vision Organization. Let the audience know what your story was, because people tend to stereotype all prisoners without knowing all the facts. And the only way we can bring the facts to the public, to members of society, is to talk about it and to let them know about these situations.
Sure. So if you looked at a picture of me, you would not even assume I did 20 years in prison. You would not assume that I was a foster child of 25 homes or part of over 30 group homes before I was 18, or even California Youth Authority. You would never assume that I was a gang member, that I was part of organized crime, and, you know, I don't fit the stereotype of a typical inmate, or even reentering back into society. My story of legacy programs was that after 20 years, I was released after being promised that I would have all the resources, that I would have the support network of parole and all these programs out here. Like, all you got to do is just reach out and ask for help. I was released during a COVID era, of course, so that played a factor. I'm falsely accused and imprisoned, and I'm, you know, so I had to deal with that, with my whole, all my charges and society as a whole, and I was judged and put in a box and just left behind. And the only solution that the state could tell me is I fell between the cracks, and that wasn't good enough for me. So I started Legacy Programs, which is Learning Education Gives AIR to Community and Youth, which AIR is another acronym for Accountability, Integrity, and Responsibility. I wanted something that was for us, by us, about us. I wanted something that was an all-around that you could just get help. So first we started out as just helping incarcerated, and then we started communicating with family members and educating them on the trauma from prison and the conditioning and what it causes, which we call PICS, post-incarceration stress syndrome. And Miriam Jacobs is pretty much our blueprint for our program, because when she made a comment 2 years ago that said, you know, we need to focus on why the crime was committed, not who committed the crime, that started making me think. And so we started really talking to the family members and communities about who's reentering back in society. I was very angry. I had a list. I was I had two options, which was going back to prison or killing myself. And I didn't have the balls to kill myself, and I was not going back to prison, so I had to figure it out. My only solution was to make a list and go out with a bang. And I prayed on it, and as a pastor, I you know, it's very embarrassing to admit that, but I was at wit's end. You know, I had nothing. When you're faced with no shelter, you don't know where you're going to get your next meal, you have just the clothes on your back and a $200 card, debit card from prison, your life is pretty much in shambles. And you know that whole saying, desperate people do desperate things. I was at that point, and I didn't know what to do. And so when I did get on my feet, I promised myself, you know, and I only made it to this point in life because of the grace of God. You know, God saw something in me when he created me. He's like, I need you to go do this. I'm going to put you through these trials and errors, and I need you to actually fulfill this. And so I made a promise. I said, if I ever get on my feet, I'm going to make sure, even if it's only one person less, it's one person less. I've done my job. Today we've helped out. We have 40 clients. We have a success rate of 100%, which two are incarcerated right now. So I can't even say that they're a success yet, but they have the tools necessary to, when they do get out. We are now case managers. We make sure they have homes. We make sure they have food. We make sure they have clothing. We reach out to other organizations for help, and we've worked nationwide with so many different organizations for their resources. And like I said, Legacy would not be what it is today if it wasn't for that, knowing that experience. And like you say, you know, people don't understand until they go through it. And if I didn't go through the whole reentry thing, I wouldn't be as good at it as I am right now, because I would have no clue. There's so many dimensions to it. And so Legacy is a God-driven organization that was brought on by a vision of when I was in prison in 2014, I wanted a program that was for us, by us, and about us. And I bring in all the organizations that are actually wanting to help and that they assist in many different ways. And, you know, so Legacy is very special to me. My story is one of, you know, I watched these prison movies and these mafia movies and people are going, oh my God, that's, what about, you know, they're glamorized by it. I look at these movies and I lived it, you know, so it's very rough reentering, being judged for a 20-year-old crime that you didn't commit. And it's very rough being, you know, dubbed as a parolee. And especially when you're trying to get on your feet and you're being held to some standard that isn't even up to date in society standards. but yet the people still want to judge and ridicule and make themselves feel better. And so I've just come to the realization of, you know, I let people be people. I'm going to keep doing me, because at the end of the day, I'm not just T57463. I am not just inmate drink. Today I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm a son. I am a pastor. I am a CEO of an organization. I'm a vice president of an organization. And, you know, when we look at organizations, we wonder why their mission – we got to look at their mission statements. You know, why is an organization what it is? If you look at my mission statement, it says that we help out formerly foster children, current foster children, homeless, and the ones reentering society, as well as the communities and families around them. You have to look at the why. Well, if you're in five or more foster homes or placements as a child, you're 90% prone to end up in the prison pipeline. The prison pipeline, when you get 80% of the ones coming home are released homeless, 80%. And then you look at the you know, New Vision's mission statement, first-time offenders, life without life sentences. If you look at that, 90-something percent is 19-year-old children. That's the average age for a first-time offender hitting a life sentence. And so we look at these mission statements and we go, I wonder why. And there's a story behind every mission statement, you know, and that's just ours. And like I said, legacy wouldn't be what it is today if it wasn't for the experiences and the trials and error. But, you know, I'm very proud of the organization and what we do. We don't do as much as I'd like, but we do something. And today we focus on just that one. Because you never know when that one, you know, this is my whole saying, is that people go, you know, Lawrence, why do you help out all these people that just take advantage of you? And, you know, like I said, it happens. Sometimes we get taken for a ride. But the thing is that I'm afraid. I am so afraid. I'm a God-fearing man. And what if I turn my back to Jesus? What if Jesus comes to me in form of a parolee and says, Lawrence, I just need a place to stay? And I say, I can't help you. What if I sit there and say, oh, well, you know, it's going to cost you. What if that's Jesus? And so our approach today, I think, you know, God's been taking out of every aspect of life, schools, books, history. Things are being changed. And, you know, even though I'm a pastor, I'm very spiritual, not religious. And I just think, like, if they're taking God out of everything, he's very absent in our lives, in our drives, and what we're doing in life. And, you know, I'm afraid of just saying no to Jesus one day, because you're going to get those 10 people that you help and those 10 people you deal with, either organizations or inmates, and you're going to get frustrated with those 10. But there's going to come one that relights that fuel, that one that comes along and goes, there's still hope in humanity. There's still that one person that's going to make your job worth 20 of those people that made it difficult.
You know, I was watching this. This was quite a while back. This was years ago. In a church where the pastor was telling the congregation that they were going to be having a new pastor taking over. And while he was talking, this man came into the church, and he was all scrubby. He looked like somebody from the homeless, you know, from the streets. And he was just raggedy, his clothes and everything else. And he went to sit down, and the people in the booth all started to move away from him, and they started to, you know, make faces. And so the pastor kept talking. And then about maybe 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, he said, the pastor that is going to be taken over, I want to introduce everyone. And he pointed to that pastor, and he said, Pastor, can you please come up? Well, this was the pastor that came into this church dressed like a bum, uh-huh, that everybody rejected, uh-huh, and it turned out to be the pastor. And this is what people don't understand. When the Christ, yes, came into this world, he came in as a nobody. He had sandals, he had a robe, he had no place to sleep. You know, he was associating with the worst of the worst, as people with the Sadducees and the Pharisees talked about, these people that he was associating with, the tax collector and all these people that are about nothing. We live in a society where everybody thinks that they are at the top. Everybody wants to be at the top. They look down at those below them, when in fact, they need to rethink what they're doing, because a lot of those people below them are people that could be where they are. But as you said, Lawrence, you do things from the heart. You are humble. And Dorothy, the same way, this is what it's all about. It's not about what you can be, how much better you can be. I remember working one time for these people on Cape Cod in New Seabury. They had a beautiful home. They lived in a very wealthy environment. There was a house next to theirs that caught on fire. When the people rebuilt that house, they rebuilt it twice as big as it was before to make it look better than the others. But what it did damage to the community because it was out of sync. It didn't fit in. So a lot of people that think that they are above others, they need to rethink because they don't fit in to the normal, the average, the people that God has created. God didn't create people to be macho. He didn't create people to be gung-ho. He didn't create people to be powerful and corrupt and deceptive and lies. He didn't create all this. He created the meek, the weak. And who did Jesus, the Christ, when he came into this world, he was healing the meek. He was healing the possessed, which shows there's two different spirits. Because in Revelation 12, it talks about the evil spirits that were thrown out of heaven, the evil angels that caused sin in the first place on this earth. And he was talking about the Christ when he came into this world to heal those that were possessed by those evil spirits. So when we look at prisoners, we have to look at what happened to them. There may be evil spirits in the prison that were automatically evil prisoners, but we also have to look at those prisoners that were possessed at the time of their crime. And being vulnerable, being open-minded, is what probably causes a lot of people to stumble. Their innocence, their vulnerability. Lawrence, you mentioned foster home. Dorothy mentioned being abused as a child. I was a social worker for many, many years and still am. And I worked with people from dysfunctional homes. I have to say, when going to college, they don't teach you about cultures. They don't teach you about races. They don't teach you about a lot of things that you need. They give you that piece of paper. But unless you've been there and done it, you don't know what you're dealing with. You're coming out of college with a piece of paper. You come from a prominent background. Many, many social workers are from white, prominent backgrounds, money. And they go into these homes not knowing the first thing because they've never been married. They don't have children. And they're going to go into these homes. They're going to see these things. And they're going to demand that they go for help. And if they threaten the foster parent, I mean the biological parents or the parents in the home, the parents are automatically going to be resistant to the social worker. You don't come in my home and tell me what I have to do. So what happens is they will not work with that social worker or those social workers. Social workers go back to their supervisors. In most cases, supervisors will side with the social worker. Kids are taken to foster homes. They're taken to court on a C&P or care and protection or a CHINS case. And then they're removed from the home and put in foster homes. Not all foster homes are good. There's a lot of them that have the heart. They want to help these children. But at the same time, there's a lot of, just like in advocates, there's a lot that are doing it for their own motives, the money. So what happens is these kids are either violated in a lot of these foster homes, they're killed in a lot of these foster homes, and there's a lot of lawsuits that are going out to social services, CPS or whatever. This is what we have to look at when we think about judging people, when we think about helping people, when we think about wanting to be there for people. If it's a passion, we have to accept the negatives. We have to accept the people that don't like us because we don't know if they don't like us because we're doing something right. If you know, that's the saying that they always have. I must be doing something right if they hate me. So this is why I say we need to look at all angles. We need to try to understand. We need to have a heart, compassion. And we need to know that we're all sinners. Maybe a lot of people haven't gotten caught yet that have done major crimes. But for those that have done crimes, those that are serving life sentences, they don't need to be in prison for life. If we're paying all this money to the Department of Corrections around the country, then the money should be used to rehabilitate, to treat physically and psychologically, and even spiritually, and release. There's no reason why there should be large corporations investing in the prisons. There's no reason why they have to be doing the death penalty when they're killing people that kill people. It doesn't make sense. Mixed messages, criminal-minded legislative members or leaders. These are some of the things that everybody has to look at, because we're not thinking fairly, we're not thinking right, and we're being evil. 323, you want to say your name, please?
Yes, this is Joe. How
Joe,
are you, Leona?
How are you? Where have you been?
That's what my first question to you is going to be. Have you been out, or have I been out? You know, we haven't talked to each other?
There were a few days that I didn't do the show because I had other things that I needed to work on. But yeah, I'm glad you're on. I don't know if you're familiar with Dorothy or Lawrence Drank, Dorothy D'Agostino, Lawrence Drank. But Joe, we're planning on an event coming up in June, the whole month of June. We're going to be making phone calls, writing letters, sending emails, and to the governors in every state, to the media, to the legislative members working on criminal justice reform to abolish death penalty. And Mike Farrell is the founder of the Focus, Death Penalty Focus, and he is working to abolish death penalties, which I agree, because there's no reason why anybody should kill anyone for killing someone. It's mixed messages. It's not right. You know Marion Jacobs from the Netherlands, Franz Kurz from Germany, Jan Banning from the Netherlands. They've been advocating for prisoners in the United States wrongfully convicted. And so they've been talking a lot about the prisons in their countries. And we're the only country that has mass incarceration. We're the only country that has death penalties and life without parole and life sentences, unless the sentences, the offenses are extreme. Again, terrorists, serial killers, killers of children and babies, and also people that have been mutilating bodies. But other than that, there's no reason why wrongfully convicted, first-time offenders, you know, victims who became offenders should be serving life and life without parole. So we're going to be using the month of June. We've already started to put together names, addresses, telephone numbers to the media, to the governors, to the legislative members. And we've been actually having the show, which we will be having until the end of May, to have people come on board and join us in this event of 2023 in June.
Ah, well, good luck. I'm against the death penalty not because I'm against the taking of a life or another life, but because the state has made too many mistakes in the past. There have been too many people who have been innocent, who have been convicted and have been executed while they've been innocent. So I'm against that. So I don't trust the government for anything. I wouldn't trust the government if it set a lemonade stand. So I'm against it for that reason. So good luck in your endeavors for doing that. But as far as taking a life for a life, you know, I'm not a religious person, but I believe in an eye for an eye. If you kill my daughter, if I get my hands on you, I believe that if I absolutely know that you did it, I also believe in the justice system, but if I absolutely know that you did it, if I saw you do it, then I think that it's not, I don't think it's murder. I think it's justice. You kill my daughter, I kill you.
Well, you know that if it's a family thing like that, it's, you know, that's between the family members and the offender. But at the same time, with the death penalty, as you mentioned, it's been known that people that have been executed have later been found to be innocent. And I want to bring up, and I have to bring this up, because Beth Michael is out of North Carolina. She and her husband they founded the Christian Pen Pal Connection. And the Christian Pen Pal Connection is an organization. They have their volunteer pen pals, but they also have prisoner resources. They have listings of all the advocates and organizations that are advocating for the incarcerated. But also, they started writing to this young man years ago when he was just a teen, and he's in his 40s now, and they've been more or less like almost like parents to him. And if you go on the internet and you type in Christopher Dunn, you will see that a judge found him innocent years and years ago when he was still in his teens, found him innocent, and yet he's still in prison many years later at the age of, I think he's in his 40s now. But Beth Michael just informed me that they did a, I guess it was a TV show on him, and I unfortunately didn't get to see it, but I'm sure that it's going to be out there. But to spend years and years and years in prison for something that you didn't do is a major problem. Reginald Clemens out of Missouri, another one that's been wrongfully convicted, he's been in prison for years as well. And he, too, went in when he was in his late teens, early 20s. But these are things that happen. A lot of these executions, they find out after that they were indeed innocent of the crimes that they committed. Reginald Clemens was on death row, and they commuted it to life in prison without parole. But he was on death row as well.
Hey, Leona, can I say something about that real quick?
Please.
So my case, I'm actually falsely convicted. And so the DA even agreed that they screwed up and straight told me on a side conversation that they can't take me back to court because it's going to put too many jobs in jeopardy. And I serve so much time that it would be a huge lawsuit against the county and the state. And that was the reason why they said, well, we understand, you know, the turmoil we put you through, but we can't pursue this. And there's evidence that I did not commit my crime. And so there, a lot of times with the death penalty, you know, it's crazy how, you know, we ignore this, you know, the government ignores. And I love that saying, I wouldn't trust the government with a lemonade stand, because I love it. We should be focusing on the 20, the 30, the hundreds that they've fought, that they've killed. And like what Joe was saying, that, you know, in the eyes of the system, it's justice to kill somebody eye for an eye. But if you kill my daughter and I go kill you, I'm a murderer. And that's and like what you said in the beginning, it's confusing. And it sends mixed messages. Like, when is it justice and when is it murder? So is the state not murderers? Do they get a free pass on this? Are they judge trial and jury? Like, you know, there's just so much around this, and there needs to be more studies and more data behind it to actually pursue. There should be more data behind it to pursue the death penalty, because now you're getting all these innocent people being murdered by the state, and it's kind of just being swept under the rug. But I see how this works, because I'm going through it right now where they won't even take me back to court because they have to admit they did something wrong 20-something years ago. And that's a shame. That's the justice system is completely needs to be reformed and adjusted accordingly.
I think this is these are the questions that need to be asked for the whole month of June, to be asked to legislative members and governors as well. I'm sorry, Dorothy.
Take the word justice and separate it. And what does it have? Just us.
Yeah. But again, you know, there's so much that we can do to reverse this. We need to get people to come together to do these things. Make these calls. Ask questions. Ask why. Why the death penalty? Why give mixed messages, especially to the youth? We live in a society right now, as I said, where everything is so confusing, everything is so chaotic, everything is just out of control, and we're expecting the young people to be able to do something that even we in society cannot do. And let's come together in unity, in harmony, and try to do some of these, the right thing, try to resolve things. We've had people from this country going over to Norway, going over to Netherlands, into France, Germany and all these countries, to see how they operate, and yet they come back with nothing. They come back with all this knowledge, but they don't do anything to reform. Dorothy, you mentioned a friend you had in the state of Washington. You want to talk a little bit about that again?
Sure. I've known this gentleman approximately 10 years that I have been, well, he calls me mom, so like a pen pal, but he's a wonderful friend. He's been in this Washington State DOC for 20, almost 31 years. He went in at the age of 18. And he, right now, Washington is looking to go toward the path, Netherlands and all, and getting rid of life without parole and the life sentence, and more or less going in the Europe way. I wish we could all think of that.
It's up to the leaders, and you know, that's where we have the problem, because we have government leaders that talk about criminal justice reform, yet they don't go into the prisons to meet with the prisoners. They don't get to hear the voices of them. They don't do any research. They travel a lot, like vacationing, really, because if they come back with nothing to offer, then what was the purpose of leaving and checking these places out in the first place? This is what we have. We have people in leadership roles. They're making all this money to lead the country. They're in conflict with one another, parties fighting parties. You know, this conflict with Ukraine and Russia and all these countries now coming together to take sides. You know, this whole thing is getting worse and worse and worse, and it's going to get much better. So work on our own country right now. Work on the prison system, the criminal justice system, reforming these unnecessary deaths, these denial of allowing these incarcerated individuals to do anything with their lives but stay in their cells, come out of their cells two or three times a day, and that's it. What is the taxpayer dollars doing? Where is it going? How is it being used?
Well, Yona, I have a question. I happen to believe in rehabilitation, as I've discussed on your show, either last year or the year before. But what particular type of therapy has been proven to rehabilitate career criminals? Is there any data that supports that?
You know, with career killers, with career prisoners, I would say they need to put them in certain prisons. This is what they need to do. They closed down some prisons, even like in Massachusetts. They're closing down Walpole, which was one of the worst. But if they take some of these empty prisons and they fill these prisons with, just like you said, the habitual offenders, fill their prisons with them, another prison with those first-time offenders, another prison with the wrongfully convicted, another prison with the lifers, another prison with whatever it might be, soon to be released. If they were to have them all divided, then they could work with them individually. The prisoners that you're talking about, they're going to need, first of all, they're going to need a lot of therapy, a lot of rehabilitation. But again, we have to look at them being institutionalized. If these people were in prison and they were institutionalized in for so long and they come out, that's what happens. They feel like they've got to be back in. Well, if that's the case, look at them, sit down, talk to them, have the group therapies, have whatever, let them, and then decide whether these people should remain inside. And if they remain inside, then start a community in the area that they're in. Start a community where they can go outside and mow the lawn, where they can cut down trees, where they can build some cottages or whatever for the incarcerated to live in. Keep them in prison if this is what they need. If this is what they, it's okay. Let me give you an example of something. Years ago, I went to Barnstable High School on Cape Cod. And because I went to Barnstable High School, I was eligible to have a home built. Okay, my father passed away. He left a lot of land. So I had land to have my house built. I had the foundation put in. My house was the last house that they actually built, the Barnstable Vocational School actually built on Cape Cod in Barnstable. They built a 3-bedroom home. The reason they decided, I was like 7th in line to have my home built. They decided to do my home, and I asked them why. And they said because I was looking for something simple. I just wanted a home, while others wanted pretty much like mansions. They wanted all these rooms. They wanted all these different benefits and everything. So they built my home. It was a 3-bedroom home. I ended up paying a mortgage at the time. It was just for the material. It was $11,000. Throughout the years, I had the carpeting put in. I did the staining and the varnishing myself. You know, I bought the furniture. Throughout the years, I ended up having 2 bedrooms added down in the basement. a bathroom and a kitchenette I started on when the tragedy happened in my life with my only child in his stumbling. And so what happened is I ended up selling my home. I sold it for $79,900. And the following year, the people that bought it sold it for $250,000. In back of our home, I had my home built in back of my mother and father's house. And it was a long driveway. In the back, there was a pond, Joshua's Pond, which is in Osterville, is off of Main Street, Tower Hill Road. My brother, my oldest brother, built his house across the street. But the thing is, what I recommend all the time in Boston, in the cities, even in New York, get these kids that are going for vocational school to become carpenters, electricians, masons, whatever the case may be. Let them have hands-on duty. Let them go out and go with them to these falling apart ghetto areas and renovate a lot of these buildings. Get these communities back in track. You know, this is the way these kids will have something to look forward to, because I know the students, when they were building my house, they were having a ball. They were having a ball. It was something that they were doing hands-on. They were in the country. Unfortunately, the cities are not the country. But all I'm saying is, it's like, let them have hands-on. Do everything that's being done in schools today is hands-on. I mean, is paperwork. Nothing hands-on. They don't get that experience. So a lot of them drop out. Years ago, they used to drop out of school because the teachers used to encourage the students to drop out of school. But the military would take them. I had two brothers that quit school in the 11th grade. They went into the Marines. I had three brothers in the Marines. My father was in World War II. I had two sisters in the Army. I had one in the Air Force who went to the seminary for 4 years, dropped out and joined the Air Force for 30 years. He's on Facebook. But the thing is, what I'm saying is, let them have hands on in whatever they do. Give them that opportunity. Don't just make them sit in a classroom and do paperwork, because they don't get that experience. The best counselors are substance abuse counselors.
Leona, I agree with you that, and I don't mind, it's a devil's workshop, and kids need extracurricular activities when they get out of school in order for them not to get involved with gangs and to even be tempted by a life of crime. But are there any therapies that, if not successful for the career criminal or the habitual criminal, that could be very useful in reforming and rehabilitating, as proven by data, the criminals that have made a big mistake with a capital M? Are there any therapies like that? If so, then that particular data and the results can be used to show that the funding needed in order to promote that kind of program would be well used. So do you know of any?
They need to do away with contracted providers like WellPath. WellPath services 36 states. WellPath has over 1,000 lawsuits filed against them. People have been permanently damaged because of it. Donna Winnett, and Donna's a sweetheart too. She's going to be on, I think it's March 1st, she's going to be on my radio show again. Donna Winnett founded the Families and Friends and Individuals for the Mentally Ill. And Donna's been working to try to get, with others, to try to get hospitals like Mass General Hospital and others, where the providers would go into the prisons. And also, she's been working on trying to get Department of Mental Health involved in the prisons. And unfortunately, the Department of Corrections, they don't want these independent providers to go in, because they want to deal with their contracted providers, because they have control over them. But I've tried to get people from the American Psychological Association to come on the radio show too. These are people that are supposed to be professionals, that are supposed to be knowledgeable, and they talk about the mental illnesses and everything, but they don't do anything. They get all this funding for research. We already know what the problems are, psychological issues that need to be addressed. But we need them to come on board. We need people in the communities to go out and seek those in the streets that are homeless, that have psychological issues, instead of waiting until they do something wrong. Years ago, I called the Department of Mental Health on, and I called the police on somebody that was in the streets in Hyannis, jumping on cars outside of King's Department Store back then. And the police came, they took him away, but they said they couldn't do anything about it unless he did something to somebody. So what happens after they do something to someone, they go to jail or prison, and the Department of Mental Health doesn't want to get involved. This is mixed messages. This is two standards. It doesn't make sense. But like you say, Joe, we need to be able to find people willing to go in and help these individuals, whether they be in the prisons, in the communities, or wherever. We're not getting enough people to help these incarcerated individuals who have psychological issues. And they all have some kind of psychological. We live in a country that's dysfunctional. We're all handicapped.
Yeah, everybody in prison, and even people who aren't in prison. We all have our own particular neurotic quirks. But the thing is, in order to get people to come on board on any particular proposition and any particular proposed remedy for any particular problem, you have to have backed up data. Because it's good to say what we need to do is this, because everybody will realize, yes, that's what we need to do. But the reason, one of the reasons that I presume that the mental health authorities aren't coming in and supporting this issue, which is what I'm assuming you're saying, is because there's no data that I know of that backs up the fact that when a person says in the mental health field that we have therapies that will rehabilitate prisoners, then if they have that, then it, a lot of people who want prisoners to stay in prison will say, let's try it. If we can get a good significant statistical percentage of people who are in prison, and then when they come out, not to go back in, so thereby lowering the recidivism rate, and at the same time will not become offenders again, then I'll take the risk. Because if it's promoted properly, and especially if you get the right people on board, okay, because of the data which backs up that particular proposition, then there will be more and more people eventually coming on board to say, okay, prison should be a situation of rehabilitation, not an environment of punishment. But until that particular data shows itself, I, for one, will say, keep them in prison. Okay?
You know, they need
everybody has problems. But,
they need to do these pilot projects. You know, start off with just a few. Start off with 12 and do some intense work with 12 prisoners and see what happens. Because
That's never been done?
I don't think it's ever been done. I have never heard of them doing any pilot project like that. And that's
that would be a good one.
That's exactly true. Do the pilot project. Even exchange. Okay, they exchange prisoners with Russia and Ukraine and the United States and all this bull. But if they were to exchange, put some of these prisoners in the prisons in Norway and in Netherlands and France and Germany and see how they fare there. And vice versa, but they have to do these pilot projects to see if these things are going to work. And that's what I'm wondering. When are they going to get around to doing some pilot projects?
They're not going to do it, Leona.
You know, it's like
the government is not going to do it. It's going to be up to activists to do it.
And like you mentioned,
all the good laws that have been passed have probably been done as a result of activists pressuring the politicians to pass a good law. I don't know of any law that any politician in my lifetime or prior to my lifetime has ever passed as a result of their knowing that this particular situation exists, and they do something. They get up off their ass, and they do it. I don't know of any politician, outside of maybe Ron Paul, but outside of him, I don't know of any others.
You know who does good is Families for FAM, F-A-F-A-M-M, Families Against Mandatory Minimum. They do a lot of good. They've been trying to encourage everyone to challenge the legislative members to go into the prisons and meet with these prisoners at least once or twice a year. They've been trying to do that. Charlie Sullivan from CURE, Citizens United for Rehabilitative Errands. Charlie Sullivan started back in 1975 to get CURE started. They have CURE in just about every state in the United States. And Charlie Sullivan, they do a lot of good because they're always they're getting the information out there to, you know, what has to be done or what's been done. They keep everyone informed. And I encourage everyone to join CURE and join FAM, because once we network, once we unite and we all come together, and we need to stop with this. I hate to say it, but we need to stop with all of this racial stuff that's going on over the country where everybody's so divided because of races. We need to come together as one, united, We don't have to like one another. We don't have to agree with one another. Just, I mean, we can agree to disagree, but we need to come together and work on these in unity as a nation. Because unless we do that, it's going to be scattered all over the place and nothing can actually get accomplished. And I'll tell you another thing is the law enforcement. I grew up in an environment where the police back then, they were trained to shoot in the leg. They were trained to shoot in the arm, the hand, to shoot guns away or knives or whatever it might be. I have never in my lifetime, and I just saw it on television the other day, it broke my heart. They just killed a man that was in a wheelchair. He had no legs. The man fell out of the wheelchair. They're shooting him, and he's hanging onto his wheelchair. What? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. If these police officers are trained to do the job, and my nephew and I, we don't speak because he defends the police. He is a police officer on the Cape. But he said it's only 1% of bad police officers. That's not true. And that's the sad thing about it. A lot of these corrupt police officers make it difficult for the good police officers. And that's why so many people hate police, including the good ones, because they're so used to being damaged by the corrupt ones. The prison's the same thing. The correctional officers and the prison officials, there's so many corrupt that are not being exposed by their peers, that their peers who are the good ones are the ones that have to take the consequences of the evil ones' own actions. We have to be leaders. We have to be able to decide for ourselves what's right and wrong. You mentioned death, an eye for an eye. Yes, in the Old Testament, that's exactly what it says, an eye for an eye, if somebody takes a life. But in the New Testament, when Jesus came into this world, and not only then, not only the Christ Jesus, but God himself with Moses. Moses was a murderer. He became one of God's most powerful, bringing his people out of Egypt. King David, with him, he takes his loyal soldier's wife and gets her pregnant, and then he has the husband killed. God forgave him. Paul, Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, everybody worships Paul in the Bible, but yet he was a murderer of many Christians. But they don't look at these kind of things. You have to dig deep into it, like Marion Jacob said, deeper justice. Go deeper into somebody's situation. Go deeper in what's going on in the prison system. And these advocates, they really make me upset when they can spend more time hating another advocate because the other advocate's doing something right or wrong, whatever the case may be, and then trying to take it out on the other person's relatives or their volunteers or whatever the case may be. People are so vengeful. They try so hard to retaliate against. But anyway, we're running out of time, so I want everybody to please give your information to the audience, and if you want to be contacted. And I will say too, Dorothy and myself and others have been putting together, compiling a list of all the, we have over 1,000 media email addresses, putting together a listing of all the legislative members and governors around the country, their names, addresses, emails, and telephone numbers. And we will be making calls for the month of June. Also, somebody had mentioned not buying anything from these contracted providers or not buying anything from these big corporations that are benefiting off of the prisoners. So we'll be talking more about that. But Dorothy, real quick, can you finish letting everybody know about that?
Yes. I found out the ARA is also deeply involved, along with TIFI in Joplin, Missouri, and ARA is very big with your sports people that go into the canteens and everything, and they are a big, big, big supplier.
Dorothy, what is the ARA?
ARA. ARA is a company, Aramark.
Okay. And they're
very big in the canteens.
You mentioned also the vending machines. You also mentioned the vending machines that don't have any names on them, so people don't know who the companies are.
In all the institutions in Pennsylvania, the vending machine used to have TIFI on it. Well, Keefe's out of Joplin, Missouri, and now there is no documentation of the who is doing the vending machines, but it is still Keefe.
Okay. Okay.
I want to say something real quick. Habitat for Humanity offers jobs for people. And I was wondering if there's any kind of an avenue that we could kind of get in touch with for inmates coming out to help build these houses that the ex-president Jimmy Carter has established down south. And Habitat for Humanity does build homeless houses too, and they do need help for carpenters and everything.
Okay. That may be something we could check into too as we get more people on board. That's an awesome idea. Okay.
And I was thinking of getting Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, he's done a lot of good work. Even in Africa, they worship him. When I was out in Africa,
Habitat for Humanity, organization.
When I was out there, I was in Ghana, West Africa. When talking about presidents, you couldn't talk about Jimmy Carter because they love Jimmy Carter for all the good that he's done. But I wanted to have Lawrence and you give the audience once again your contact information, and please get in contact with Dorothy and Lawrence so we can get this show on the road. We have a lot to do between now and the end of May to gather this information, to get everybody in place with what they want to do, their position or whatever. So please do. Lawrence, do you want to start?
Sure. You could find me Sparky Lee on Facebook. It says I'm from Georgia, and I have a picture of me and my wife. Also, legacyprograms.org@gmail.com. You can reach me, and my phone number is 805-621-1176. And that's for Legacy and for the other organizations such as New Vision, that you can reach us out. Like I said, Legacy is for homelessness, former, current foster children, and reentry. And New Vision is if any volunteers or anybody wants to help or be part of it. It's for first-time offenders, life without and life sentences. Thank you.
Okay. Do you want to give them your email address in case they want to get in contact with you, or did you already give that?
Yeah, sure. I just go with you could Lawrence Drenk, LAWRENCE, D as in David, RENK @gmail.com. That'll work too.
Okay, and Dorothy?
Before I give my information, Lawrence, you're awesome. I love you. Dorothy Jean D'Agostino, the telephone number is 215-858-0095. My email address is lowercase d, J-E-A-N, Angel, A-N-G-E-L, 04, @yahoo.com. You can get in touch with me any time of the day. I will answer your call. Thank you.
I want to thank you both for coming on. And again, I hope and pray that more people do call in and get involved. I know a lot of people have been talking about it and wanting to get involved. A lot of things are going on in June. And everybody that talks about nothing happening, it's not happening if you're not doing anything. So I hope and pray that people will get involved, and it won't be anything that you'll have to leave your home for, to make phone calls, to write letters, to email, to connect in any way at all. So I thank you all for listening in. Lawrence, I thank you. Dorothy, I thank you. And I look forward to next Tuesday having the show to talk more about it. Everyone, I want you to know that tomorrow we will have Mariam Jacobs on with us from the Netherlands, and she will be talking about her philosophy of the system and also the negative effects of the penal system, the comparison between prisons and other countries compared to mass incarceration in the United States. So please join us tomorrow at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you all for listening in, and thank you again, Lawrence and Dorothy, for being on.
From lots of meta, everyone, angels.